Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
Disgusting. And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. It's our first one of 2024. Ooh. And by the way, we've already had like five first jokes of the day before we started. So Goldie, I'm gonna give you the opportunity. I just sneezed. And what did you observe?
Well, you almost had a typical disgusting display, which is... We're on the Zoom, and it looked like you hard stopped a barf.
First joke of the day.
It did not look like a sneeze. It just sounded like someone who just slammed their esophagus shut as stuff was trying to evacuate at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it looked like I hit the emergency brake. But it was just a sneeze. But I think that sometimes those noises don't get picked up by the mic. So you didn't hear the sneeze. You just saw me going, whoop. Yeah, in the post sneeze world that I was living in,
20%. I thought like half your face was going to fly off.
I wish I can pick with
like one of those Mission Impossible faces.
Yes, I will. Oh, please, I hope Tom Cruise is under here. The nose would be smaller.
I was going to say you've caught Maestro fever, huh?
Oh God!
I mean, you're even dressing like the guy.
Oh, Maestro.
Oh yeah, the very casual. Let me tell you something about music.
Oh God!
I still haven't watched that, but I saw just like someone made a GIF of him conducting.
I know, that was ridiculous.
I gotta see this. Send it to me.
It's Jerry Lewis. Yeah. It's literally like a Jerry Lewis, Jim Carrey, flop sweat, ridiculous flying wig.
Yeah.
There's 3 minutes of it. There are 3 minutes in a row of that.
I kind of can't wait to see it. Because I read, this was a few years ago, there was this guy who, he called it thin slicing, and I assume this goes across different disciplines, but his idea was like, he could watch a married couple interact for under a minute. And predict with like 95-degree accuracy if they got
Malcolm Gladwell
got divorced. But it's like by thin slicing that clip, I was able to just generalize like this movie is stupid and ridiculous.
Yes, that was an accurate thin slice. That was a very
like it was him, oh, and he just dives the baton down and lifts up. And they would have known what to play.
I wish that I were, you know, 25 years younger and into like, you know, technically putting funny internet things together, because I would absolutely that scene with the Looney Tunes theme, like just him passionately conducting whatever Mahler or whatever the hell it was, just to the Looney Tunes. It was crazy.
Well, that's one of that actually is probably my favorite Bugs Bunny is the Barber of Seville.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that is so good.
He's got a couple of conductor ones. There's the Barber of Seville where he's literally just cutting Elmer Fudd's hair or giving him a shave, but then there's the one where he actually conducts an opera singer at the Hollywood Bowl, which is one of my favorites. And you'll also hear our first joke of the day, friend Danny Smith and I both love that. And there's a moment where Bugs is walking in as the conductor and Tails and very serious, and all the people in the orchestra start going, Leopold, 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 you know, like, so whenever somebody walks into the room, Danny and I will often say Leopold. We should have got Danny to give us a first joke of the year. I'm disappointed when Goldie said that, I was thinking, oh, that would have been nice.
Maybe we don't do jokes this year. Who cares?
Yeah, no, it's too late. You already did one. Hard stop, a barf.
I will say your episode where you guys wrote is right now, it's on this incline for being our top episode. Well, I mean, after Mulaney, of course.
But I bet, like, Jimmy, because Jimmy Carr probably said for people to listen.
Yeah, Jimmy's up there. And of course, Mulaney's are still way up there. Yeah. And what's our
Mankiewicz.
Dateline? Yeah, he's
Mankiewicz. Yeah, that was the surprise Mank bump.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, people love this podcast when it's not us.
Yeah.
I know.
Totally.
Hey, but the writing one was us.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, it was really Hillman.
Hillman, all Hillman. Hillman mentioned again.
They've caught Hillmania.
That's great.
Love it. Well, so much for this year without jokes. We can't even stick to that.
Well, JC went on a trip.
Yeah, JC, let's hear about Copenhagen.
Okay. Well, we went for Christmas, flew to Copenhagen, right? Yep. Nina Hagen. And we got there on Christmas Day. We stayed at an amazing hotel. It was just, the food was amazing. I kind of just slept for a couple of days. We let ourselves be jet lagged because everything's closed on Christmas.
And shout out the hotel. You might stay there free next time.
Sanders. Guys,
Isn't jet lag underratedly the best feeling?
Yeah. Well, because you sleep so.
Because you can actually sleep. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's that first daytime sleep is like the most comfortable, easy to fall asleep thing when you have jet lag.
I think I slept like 20 hours, and what I'll say is I have not taken a vacation since 2018. This is like not a joke. Since before I moved here to LA to take the job on Family Guy. So it was much needed. And Stu was very good about being like, you're on vacation. If you want to sleep, you sleep. There's no pressure.
I will
for
go
us.
Do drugs. You sleep.
So then it was pretty cold. There was a storm like over, I think it was over England, like a big storm, but we were getting a lot of the outer stuff, and it was supposed to be really snowy, but it wasn't. So it was nice to be walking around. Right. People are so nice in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. And then after Christmas, we went to Amsterdam. This is where Goldie's like, yeah, get those drugs. And it was warmer there, which was weird. And I didn't realize this, but it's a destination place for like partiers. I don't know why I didn't realize that. Because I don't party, I guess. And everyone's like, wait, you're staying at the Soho House and you didn't even go to the New Year's Eve party? Because apparently that's like a big deal there.
Right.
Are you shocked when you go to Vegas that people are gambling?
I can't believe there's so much gambling
here. What's happening here?
But it was such an amazing, pretty much like healing time, because we just did whatever we want and I slept whatever we wanted. And if I was sleeping and Stu was awake, he would go out and have a nice time and go sit at coffee shops. And, you know, they call them coffee shops there.
Yeah.
So it's very confusing when you actually want a coffee shop.
Well, that's where you look for Starbucks.
Right. Right. It's
God bless America.
Yeah.
And now, was I correct when I told you before you went to Copenhagen that everyone there is a 9?
Well, I think you might have put it in my head. Like,
is it at a German 9 or a number 9?
No.
9.
9.
Maybe we didn't see that many 9s, but there also it was pretty quiet because the first 2 days we were there, everything was closed. So we
the 9s are out of town.
Right. The nines are like, nines are like in like Nevis, you know?
Yeah.
St. Kitts.
Do they eat those cookies in a tin, or is that just something we made up?
Oh, Stroop waffles? Amsterdam. Amsterdam Stroop waffles? Yeah. Those are amazing. They're like
Stroop waffles. the indentation when I get off patio furniture.
Gross. But yeah, that was Amsterdam, and those were, we had some fresh ones. But we went and ate, when we were in Copenhagen, we went to this like Michelin, this vegan restaurant, this Michelin rated restaurant that.
Yeah, the tire companies know all the good restaurants.
Yeah. You better believe it. They're all wheel drive appetizers.
That's great. That's great. And, we had so much good food. It was, we both awesome. Got sick. We both got like really, really sick. But I know, yay, sick. But I feel great. I feel rested. I'm happy and could be, you know, the best vacation I've had so far.
I mean, the first time you open a file labeled American Dad 1205-23, how happy are you going to be?
Right back into it.
Season 18.
Now, follow-up question for someone like me. Did you guys fly first class?
We got upgraded to Polaris.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
It was.
Yep.
How'd you get upgraded? You just put your name on a list and lucked out, or you paid?
So Stu had just enough like status for flying. So what you do is you pay a little bit of money and you use points to put yourself on the upgrade list. Stu has this whole thing worked out. And so in fact, we stayed an extra day because we weren't going to get the upgrade on the flight that we were originally on. So we stayed an extra day because we're dinks. Yeah. Double income, no kids, and decided we're going to take our chances on another flight, and we got the upgrade, and so we got upgraded on the way back.
But why did you then have jet lag if you were like sleeping?
Right now I don't. So
okay, all right, you just got back.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got back. I don't even remember when I got back. No, Wednesday I got back. So, but I slept all day yesterday.
Nice.
That's great.
Nice. Oh well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Awesome.
How about you guys?
Nah, never mind.
Okay.
Well, I do. I was in Boston, then I was in New York, and then I had to come back to Boston. My aunt passed away, and I do want to talk about her for a second because, in a funny way, it relates to some stuff we've done on the podcast. But my aunt Dorothea, she was 97 years old. She was hilarious, beloved, an amazing cook, really funny, heard a lot of great stories. It was my dad's younger sister. So she was born in 1926.
Wow.
And, you know, just passed away like 3 days ago. But
crazy.
A couple things that I didn't know. Well, some I knew, but number one was that like in 1983, she had was a finalist in the Pillsbury Dough Bake Off.
Whoa. So
she was on like, it was on CBS or something. What? And she That's was so on cool. TV and she made her recipe, which it involved like crab meat and this pastry thing. And anyway, I remember at the time all my relatives saying like, she'll never win because a regular person can't afford crab meat. And sure enough, placed like third. But so the other thing I didn't know was that I had known she went to Emerson College in the 40s, but, you know, and I didn't really put two and two together. Like my grandfather was an illiterate roofer and here, like this woman in the 40s went to go be an actress. She's from Lawrence, Mass. Like how much gumption that must have taken and sort of like, you know, how much guts to put herself out there. So apparently she had been in some stage production and been scouted for Hollywood and they wanted to bring her out for a screen test. And my dad's older brother, who kind of ran the family, said absolutely not and shot it down. And she dropped out of college and went to work for the phone company and like never did anything show business again. But so it's you know, she was kind of the first person to attempt this. Like I always thought, I was the one, but it was really her. But then I heard this great story that so I think it was like her junior year. Another student who was a freshman took an interest in her this student's name was Norman Lear.
Oh, no way. And God. No way.
They're and reunited.
So
he was very much interested in her.
Oh, my God.
And he asked her out. And she, reportedly, she said, "Get away from me. You're a nothing."
Oh, no. That's so sad. I'm like, I guess he's like, I'm going to make something of myself.
I made that joke about a stupid hat. And I feel like this is why we're family.
A full circle moment. Yeah, I love that. Oh, so she had, I mean, that's pretty crazy that she had a very strangely early Hollywood dreams shattered story.
Yeah.
I mean, the older brother who was in charge of the family, was he your dad's older brother as well?
Yeah. And he was just, everyone did what he said. Like, my dad wanted to be an archaeologist and he made him be a doctor. Right. Stuff like, but so
Indiana Goldblatt.
Yeah. But one other funny story I heard from my mom was that so she was very much into shopping and jewelry and all this sort of stuff. And
yeah, a woman.
She was a looker too, right?
She was beautiful, yeah. So she, I guess at one point she wanted to have a portrait painted of herself, and she wanted in the portrait to have all kinds of like jewels and fur and expensive clothing on. And the reason she gave was she said, if I die before Gordon, her husband, I want the next woman to be saying, what happened to all those jewels? And spend her time looking for them.
Wait, you are definitely related.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So, and then I started hearing stories about, you know, my grandmother on that side. And you just kind of go, oh, I always thought I got some of this stuff from my dad. But it really is like the women on that side were really funny. That one of the things that my aunt repeated that I guess my grandmother used to say is they said, you know, she was close with her family. She didn't have that many friends because her famous saying was, you don't have to be palsy-wellsy with everyone.
That's you. There you go. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's great.
So anyway, she'll be missed. But it was, you know, I'm glad I was able, while I was back here, to go. And
that's nice. That's
very much.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So now we can walk into a small death of our own. It's time for Johnny Jokes. Welcome from anywhere but Hollywood, here's New Year's Johnny.
Oh, boy. Yes. Okay. We got a bunch of similar kind of gross ones today. Here we go. Oh, maybe you heard about this story. Well, this is wild stuff. A librarian in Tennessee has been fired for hosting after-hours sex parties in the public building. Yeah. Whoa. Her attorney claims that the parties were strictly educational and that she was merely teaching folks about the GUI decimal system. The GUI.
I knew it was going to involve the GUI decimal.
Yes.
I just didn't know how.
That's how we got there. That's
a good one.
That's all we can do with libraries.
What a way to kick it off.
Thank you. All right, well, it'll get downhill from here.
Best joke of the year.
There it is.
And it'll still be
it's
in
gone.
December.
Conspiracy theorists in England are demanding Queen Elizabeth be exhumed, claiming that she was poisoned by the deep state. Yeah.
Ooh.
Wild. Be careful what you wish for, gang, because there's nothing worse than a stinky Regina.
Oh.
There's sort of a theme this week.
That's good.
There's a theme my whole life of puns. All right, here we go. Getting off that. All right. Southern California has opened the world's first AI restaurant. Yes, entirely run by AI. My wife and I went, and I guess they're still working out the bugs. I ordered the beef stroganoff and ended up with a tableside tug from a Roomba.
Oh, a Roomba.
I don't know why the Roomba's in an AI restaurant, but it seems like it kind of makes sense. And finally, thankfully, an Iowa man who was constipated for 14 days had to cancel his family vacation to deal with the problem. Huh. I guess you could say his holiday plan was deterred.
Oh. That was in the news?
Johnny Two.
Well, that was in the news. There was a news story about a guy who couldn't shit for 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. It was headline front and CNN. I troll all the tiny sites to get this shit.
But how was that even on a site? Like, someone heard about it and called a journalist?
I guess.
All right. No further questions. Well, conflict continues unabated in the Middle East, but the Israeli government has a radical new plan to destroy Hamas. Get it to date Taylor Swift.
Right. Kelsey. Wait, that was in the news?
Somewhere in Gaza, there's someone who hasn't shit for 2 weeks. Get their name and... We need to confirm all the sources. Anyway, well, I don't know if you heard about this. The last lighthouse keeper in America is set to retire.
Aww.
Yeah. In a ceremony later this week, she will be replaced by a switch. Also in the news, former House Representative George Santos has slammed an upcoming HBO biopic as inaccurate. So it's accurate?
The liar.
Okay. Well, this was has everyone abuzz. The Jeffrey Epstein flight logs have been released, casting a range of suspicion that those on it, including former President Bill Clinton, may have committed sex crimes. But Clinton has an interesting legal strategy. He claims he was on the plane, but he didn't impale.
Oh my god. Instead of
instead of didn't inhale. That was a famous 90s
quote. And then you make the leap that impaling is sex. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Just for those who
the gooey decimal system.
You understand.
That was good. And finally, more names are expected to be released, this Epstein flight log, but the court won't say when. Wow, it's the first time Jeffrey Epstein has left other people hanging.
Oh my God.
Excellent. Excellent. Other people. Good crop. Nice. Woo,
happy New Year.
And you're saying this Epstein thing was in the news?
It was right below headline. Man trapped in 2 weeks. Beneath that, there's a very small.
I didn't scroll down far enough for the Epstein thing. Yeah, God, that's funny. That is funny stuff. Yeah, the Epstein thing felt like kind of a fart in the wind. It was sort of like, oh, they're going to name names. And then it was like Bill Clinton. It's like, yeah, well, we all knew that.
Right.
And did they not put Trump on there? Because we know Trump was there.
They put him in, but it was just only referring to that the plane landed in New Jersey. And he said, while we're here, we should go to Trump's casino.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's like a nothing. But also it's like, you said, you keep hearing like Jeffrey Epstein was this genius, a financial mastermind, and pulling all the strings. But it's like, so he thought Prince Andrew was really important.
I know.
Yeah,
that's a really good point.
That's your big get. Like, oh, if I could get Prince Andrew and all his influence and have him under my blackmail, it's like, I don't know what you could do with that.
Yeah. If he had only lived to see The Crown, he would have understood how unimportant Prince Andrew is.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
disaster. All right. So, Franz, I'm going to issue a little disclaimer right here because I've heard some blowback about this in the past. So, coming up today, we are going to discuss a couple of movies that we liked and we wanted to just talk about them. So, we were going to talk about The Holdovers and Saltburn.
Okay. I'm going to play this.
Spoiler alert.
Can I add to that list? I would like to talk about the movie Blackberry.
Darn it, I didn't as well. Get to watch that. Yeah, I'll watch that, but yes. That. But I'd love for you to talk about it.
Okay, then I won't talk about it.
Well,
okay.
Well, you can. I mean, we may get through Saltburn and Holdovers in 15 minutes and then go nuts.
Okay.
But but basically, if you're listening right now and you want to be in on this, pause it. Both these movies are readily available on Amazon, I think. Well, no, Holdovers was Peacock, and Saltburn is Amazon. And they're both fun movies to watch, so give them a watch, then pick us up, and now we can spoil them all. All right, so let's...
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Let's talk about it. Which one do you want to talk about first, Goldie?
I think The Holdovers, because I think if you talk about Saltburn first, then The Holdovers will just seem too tame.
I agree. I totally agree. Okay. Yeah, let's the Saltburn was a wild ride. So let's start with The Holdovers. So The Holdovers is a movie. It's directed by Alexander Payne, who we love. He did Sideways, he did Election, he did what was the other really good one?
About Schmidt.
Yeah, we love him. He makes great movies, and it was written by a fellow named David Hemmingson, who was actually a writer on Family Guy for That's a very crazy. Short period of time, maybe a dozen, 15 years ago. So, Goldie, I don't think you were there then.
I was
there when he was a very like nice, engaging guy who was only there briefly. So we didn't really get to know him. So I think like most Family Guy writers, I was really hoping this was going to suck.
Oh my god.
But it didn't. And we'll talk about why. I'll get into the nitty-gritty of it later, but some of the things that Dave and Alexander Payne did really well in this, I thought were they created a three very interesting characters that I was engaged with all three of them. The young student who's held over, Paul Giamatti, who plays the professor, the curmudgeonly professor who has to watch the kids during this winter break, and the chef.
The cafeteria woman.
Who had lost her son in Vietnam and was there celebrating her first holidays without him. And the characters were set up really well. It really felt like they did a good job of just like saying, okay, this is where we are. These are the characters you're going to be watching. And now let's just sort of see what happens. One of the things Alexander Payne does so well, Goldie, and I'm sure you've noticed this. It's like the worlds that we're in with him in Sideways, in this movie, The Holdovers, and in a way in About Schmidt and Election 2, it's like, he just kind of lets the physical world that we're in sort of exist. Like he doesn't overdo it. He doesn't give you too many like glamour shots and like, oh, helicopter shots and sunset shots. It's like he lets you see where you are. The world is just the world, and the craziness comes out of the people in it. And I think that that's what he did here. But I wanted to, what did you guys think of this movie?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
That's all I could start
talk
with.
About it.
Well, first of all, I wasn't sure the direction it was going to go. I was under the impression it was going to go in the direction of like Dead Poet Society a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really kind of pleased that I was surprised when they all took off in the helicopter that I was like, oh, that is the kid who stays. Like, nothing was obvious to me, but maybe that's just me.
That's a good point. And Goldie and I talked about that as well. I personally kind of wanted the other kids to stay because they were creating like a Breakfast Club Goonies type crew with that group of kids. And then suddenly all but one kid are gone.
Yeah.
And I'll point out a few of these along the way. I will say, as the resident prep schooler on this podcast, it is entirely unrealistic that ski helicopter dad took the Asian kid on the ski trip. Never would have happened. He absolutely would have been left behind, especially in 1970 at a prep school. Like the division between
that's so fascinating.
White people and minorities at a prep school is something to behold.
Right. Like,
and
that's real.
And it just never would have happened. And honestly, I was missing that kid because I thought that kid was really cute and like really sympathetic. Yeah. And I wanted to learn more about him. And I thought he would have been a nice, you know, extra kid. Yes. To stay the whole break, but no, they took them all away.
Well, I guess his tool was to show that Angus was like actually a good kid underneath.
It was the save the cat moment with, you know, which is that that's a screenwriting book about how when you want to get sympathy for one of your otherwise unlikable characters, you have them save a cat early in the movie. So the audience then says, this is ultimately a good person. But for me, the things I loved about this movie were, I'm always nostalgic for a prep school that I never went to.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have excelled in that environment.
You would have.
So everything from just the opening credits when they were using the vintage film stock, film logos and everything.
That was cool.
It felt like being in the 1970s, as I remembered. It felt very true to that, which is a very warm place for me to be. Mm-hmm. So I saw it. I've now seen it twice. I saw it first in the theater, and then I saw it last night with my mom on Peacock.
Streaming on the cock.
And when I saw it in the theater, I don't go to a lot of adult movies in the theater. I can't remember the last one I saw without a kid. So I was like entirely transported. And that's awesome. I thought, you know, all the performances were so good and specific and believable that, you know, and again, like JC, it wasn't quite what I expected, but the way they introduced the element of Vietnam in the bar with the guy who was missing a hand, how subtle that was, that like, they remind you, you know, when they go back out to the car, it says, is that the first person you've seen missing a limb? And it's like, oh, right. Like the townies they talk about, like these kids are not a part of that, and how conflicted you are about even the protagonist of a film where you're going, oh, great, he got saved from this Vietnam, and now someone else gets to die in his place. And I thought the movie did a really good job of you know, at the end, particularly not having a moment of, you know, you saved my life and I'll always be grateful, and him going like, you know, I've learned a lot from you and I'm going to take that freedom and go out in the world. Like it just was what life is, which is like, there's something there, but it's ultimately doesn't feel like quite enough to have closure or to feel satisfied, but you just kind of have to call it end.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I had some thoughts about things that were said and unsaid during the movie as well. And one of the notes, David Hemmingson, I'm going to give you a note. Some of the stuff early on in the prep school scenes didn't ring so true to me, because there was, I'm thinking in particular of the scene where...
Wait, let me guess.
Yeah.
They don't have Cobb salad every night.
That was a huge, I was getting to that. I was going to close with the Cobb salad. There was a funny detail where a guy's eating Cobb salad every day, and they made some joke that there was like blood or semen in it.
No, he jerked it.
Yeah, you're right. there was a scene where when Paul Giamatti's teaching his class, and why are you holding up your finger?
I just want to let you know that David Hemmingson went to Watkinson School, a boarding school in Hartford.
Yeah. No, I believe it.
Okay. Okay. But I mean,
I believe it. Ever heard of Watkinson? But yes, I believe it. one of the things that didn't ring true was
Watkinson is a feeder to Ball State.
So in that scene, there was a moment where, okay, he hands back all the tests and the class hasn't done well. And then there was that sort of asshole kid who, ended up going on the helicopter and getting the sunburn on his face later.
Yeah.
But he was sort of like, hey, don't you know, we need these grades to get into college. Like that stuff in prep school was never said aloud. Like there would never be a scenario where you would get F's and D's back and you'd be like, hey, teacher, but wait,
right.
you would wait and complain about it with your friends.
Yeah.
But you would never confront a teacher that publicly. You just would. That wouldn't be.
Would you call home, like say you were a child of influence, would you call home and then your parents would call the faculty or some administrator
or something?
I bet that happened. I bet if you called home and said this teacher's a tyrant and I'm getting fucked in this class, something might happen that way. Yeah, that's a good point.
But I mean, because you were never in the situation where you're like, if I, you know, get a C- here, I'm not going to get to go to Connecticut College.
Never. No, I was right on track, baby.
You're like, I'm good. I'm good. No worries.
This is lining up perfect. But yeah, so stuff like that. And there were a couple scenes like in the dining hall where stuff was shouted in front of the teachers there was a lot of stuff that was text that should have been subtext at the beginning. And then as you say, Goldie, when we got to the end, when there was definitely like an opportunity for one of those movie moments of him crying, you know, as the car was going, you taught me, you know, goodbye, Mr. Chips, like all that bullshit. They didn't do that, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
I thought there could have been more of that throughout the movie. I thought there was a little too much of saying what we feel out loud, you know, in front of a teacher, especially. It just didn't feel like it felt like
that
you needed to build to that.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's almost like as the movie went along, they said less.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that's fair, but also I think for public school dopes like me who didn't know the difference.
But in public school, it probably wouldn't happen either.
I mean, there's just no supervision and no one cares about anything. Like literally the most incredibly violent fights I've ever witnessed in my life, having lived in New York and Los Angeles, are still the fights I saw in public high school.
Wow.
They were incredibly violent.
Wow.
Whoa. That's scary.
Yeah. No, somebody once unfastened my tie.
Oh,
that was pretty violent.
So
I remember
awful.
That
so
bastard
awful.
Bully.
Are you traumatized?
Wait, so
one thing about the cafeteria teacher, I felt it kept pulling me out of the movie was her accent. I didn't understand the necessity for her to have
I had the same. What accent was that?
Was
it
trying
Boston.
To be Boston?
It was a Boston
like a
accent.
Southie? Was it, no, where was she from?
Roxbury. But
Roxbury.
That's not. Yeah.
No.
I was like, is she doing some kind of Maryland accent I don't know about, maybe?
Yeah. And I didn't feel it was necessary.
It took me a while. Yeah, it took me a while to really kind of lock in on it too. I listen, and I said this to Goldie. So this actress, and we should know her name. I don't, but she was very good. And there's already some kind of like Oscar buzz. You know, she might be nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Her name is Divine Joy Randolph.
Thank you,
Divine Joy Randolph. Okay, so she was great, and she is a plus sized African American actress. And to me, let me say that in simpler terms. When you put a big black woman in a movie, it's a cheat code for me. Like I'm instantly like totally invested in that character.
Amazing.
It brings to the screen like such an extra kind of like backstory in a way where you feel kind of love and sympathy for a character right away. And especially with what this character was going through with the loss of her son. So that all set up perfectly. And Goldie, you and I have talked before. We did a whole podcast on Sideways because we love it so much. And this wasn't Sideways. I think still that's the top of the pain pyramid for me. But Paul Giamatti It's so he's good. So interesting because he was fantastic in Sideways, and in a way, this character felt like an extension of that Sideways character. There were a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
But then he does weird things in the middle where he's on like Verizon ads as Albert Einstein, and they're like terrible, and you're like, what are you doing? He was so great in this. Like you know, listen, he had the thing with his eyes are already kind of bugged out as they are. And clearly he was wearing a contact to give him kind of, they called him Walleye in the movie. And just every time that guy spoke, like you just can't take your eyes off him. He's so good. You know, yeah. he just absolutely hits a home run in this movie. I thought he was kind of.
You know, you said that comment about Sideways to me before the podcast, and I think you're sleeping on the rewatchability of this as a Christmas movie. That having just watched it a second time, I was like, I will watch this now every Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Because it gives you that feeling of the satisfying but unsatisfying holiday that is like, that you're just, you can't do enough. You know, it's like when he gets the tree and he's like, I did it. I have presents for everyone. And people are like, what? But there's no this.
Yes. Yeah. But he's also, you know, like starts out as the Grinch sort of, and he starts to soften.
Yes.
Like
which you knew that was, I mean, like that's a good playbook to run in a movie like this. And especially with somebody like Giamatti, you can feel it coming because he has, even though he was an incredibly convincing curmudgeon, he also has this softness to him and like a kindness in his eyes or his eye in this movie that you know is going to come through. It's interesting. I was sort of back and forth on the main kid.
I thought he was great.
Yeah, no, I know. We talked about that. I thought he was really good in spots, and in other spots, it was like the thing of like, okay, this is where the actor cries. Let's see some tears. And we were getting them, you know. Also, a very unrealistic prep school thing. The girl he made out with, that was way too quick. That would have been in prep school. That would have been a 4-month endeavor. Like she was way too. Are you looking at my? Are you looking down my shirt? Yes.
Let's kiss.
Well, let's kiss. It's like nope. I wish it was that way. No, it didn't happen like that.
It might have been different in the 70s.
I had that thought too. Coming off of the 60s, maybe people were a little more loose and fancy free, but that certainly was not my experience. But the kid was. Definitely, and I will watch it again, Goldie. I think that's a good suggestion because I'm definitely still thinking about it. It's not something that I would dread watching again, so I'll give it another pass and see if it goes up a couple notches because there was a lot in it. You know, it was over 2 hours, which was unusual for a small movie like that. It never felt long.
Yeah.
You know, I was never like, okay, let's just get to the, you know, get to the climax. Like I was interested the whole time.
Same.
Yeah. I mean, they did a great job. Dave Hemmingson, hats off. Alexander Payne, you don't need our kudos, but that was a triumph. And as Goldie says, the Christmas movie he'll go back to every year. Goodbye, Elf.
It had the right amount of conducting in it, which was at the very beginning for 10 seconds.
Oh, right. No, I thought you were going to say, which is zero.
I know. No, it had conducting.
Was it the choir?
All in your face about it.
Yeah.
Do we have any other thoughts on the holdovers? I thought the soundtrack was a little bit paint by numbers, but, you know, I guess there are
barely
so,
remember.
So many songs you can choose from in that era that haven't been used before.
I have one question, sort of a film. What do you think it meant when he got to the edge of the school drive and he spit out the liquor? Like, was that like a contempt for all sort of elevated things? Was that, I'm not going to drink anymore? Like, what was that moment supposed to be? Because I thought he should just drink it and go.
It was the liquor that he stole from the headmaster.
I know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
Okay, I'm setting
stupid.
Right, well, question, based on that question, I'm not sure. To me, it was just seemed like, you know, the contempt of spitting. was just like, this is what I think of you and your fancy bourbon, but I'll take it.
Right, towards the headmaster.
Maybe there was something else that was intended there. It just felt like, it almost felt to me like a what are we going to do in this moment, and that's what they came up with. And it was pretty good, but a little confusing.
Oh.
Yeah, it just felt like the easier, clearer choice is you just take a sip of it, show us you took it, and then leave.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. Yep.
So that invalidated. That ruined the movie for me.
There were just a few... certain things they nailed. The prep school dining room was perfect.
Ooh.
I mean, it clearly was absolutely an actual prep school dining room they filmed in, but it was... That's exactly what ours looked like. And the several others I'd been to, they looked just like that.
I thought they were going to play Quidditch, but they didn't.
Wrong season. If they had been there in the spring for the spring holdovers, they would have been playing Quidditch.
Did you play Quidditch?
Oh, nonstop. I mean, I was on JV Quidditch. I couldn't quite make the varsity, not surprisingly. Okay. So holdovers, very fun. Streaming on the cock. Check it out. Congrats to everyone involved. We'll see you at Oscar time. Now, let's get into what I've been calling the Feel Dick movie of the year. Saltburn. This was just awesome. So Goldie, lead us off with some thoughts about this, because I enjoyed the hell out of this.
Well, there's nothing I enjoy more than just a good movie creep. Not a
totally
sociopath, but just an out and out kind of cretin.
Yeah.
Yep. A vile little wormy guy.
Yeah.
Who's just operating and doing stuff. So I liked it from the beginning. I knew nothing about it, which, by the way, is the way to go in. Don't listen to this if you haven't seen it yet.
Yes.
I'll say.
Yeah.
Because you should know as little as possible.
Yeah.
Because it's delightfully close to one of my favorite movies, which is The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes.
I would not put it up there with that.
Agreed.
It's interesting. I kind of saw them as equals.
Oh.
Oh. I don't. I mean, because this to me goes off in a more sort of artsy fartsy magical realism type direction. That,
yeah.
But you know, look, as much as we pretend as a society that, you know, it's funny because I on our last podcast or two podcasts ago, I was very much against May, December. And I had some things to say, and I said, you know, because you go, people are saying like, oh, it was this incredible thing. And it had this message, and you go, what's the message? That it's like, celebrities aren't really what you think.
Right.
Actors can be shallow and inconsiderate. Like, what's the revolutionary message? So it's kind of unfair that I like this other movie where you go, what's the message? Like, the aristocracy isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Right.
Rich people are not good people. There's some corruption in these palaces. So, you know, I'm not consistent as a critic, but I like what I like. I loved being in this world. And the fact is that whether it's Succession or this, when you're in the world of elevated wealth, privilege, Oxford,
totally,
palaces, parties, it's very fun.
I agree.
Totally.
Transported.
It's rare that a character has a butler that I walk away upset.
Totally.
Yeah, that butler. It was really interesting because there were like skipping stones along the way of great but disgusting moments. Like this movie, there are some movies that do disgusting and it just like turns you off because it just feels like they're doing it for the sake of doing it.
Yes.
And this movie had a couple of really over the top disgusting moments that I was cringing watching, but I really liked. Like it was.
Yeah. And I want to duplicate really in my own life.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you say? Sorry.
I want to duplicate these moments in my own life. I mean, having just been in a cemetery, then the rest of your life, every time you go to a cemetery, you're going to think of Saltburn.
That's hilarious.
I know. It was the closest thing to the MacGruber fucking a ghost scene that you'll ever see in a drama.
It was really great. And also, well, Goldie, if you want to replicate those things, that when I get back to LA, I can come over and take a bath and then just head out.
Oh my God. That was.
I'll let you do what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very yucky.
Oh, that boy. Was... The shots they got of the. So.
But can I ask?
Yeah.
Does anyone jerk off in a bathtub? That's so gross to me. Like that already. So you go like, it's just you've got scrambled egg jizz in there, right?
And the filth of your body.
It's like you've poached your jizz. And then someone's coming along and eating the jizz yolk. Like it was, I mean, that's just horrible. Like I don't know who's then bathing. Like you would have to then go, well, I got to take a second bath now.
Yeah you got to shower after that bath. That'll be the thing. Yeah,
so that struck me. The same way the prep school thing struck you as false.
Yeah.
Here's an area where
we each have our own areas of expertise.
Yeah. I was a J.O. consultant.
The J.O. Yeah, so because we've already announced that we're spoiling, so what we're talking about is there's the main character in this played wonderfully by this actor, Barry Keoghan, I think is his name. Barry Keoghan. I don't know how you pronounce it. He's a young Irish actor. He's going to be playing the Joker in the next Batman movie. He's sort of the hot young actor right now. But he has a crush or is in love with this other boy with whom he goes to Oxford. And that kid was like the most handsome kid I'd ever seen. And so this guy has a crush on him. So the handsome kid takes a bath, jerks off in the bathtub. And there's our little creep afterwards when the bath is slowly draining down. He's got his mouth down by the drain, just
so
slurping
disgusting.
It up like a fish that had been in a broken goldfish bowl, just like gulping.
It was repulsive.
Yeah, it seemed, I got to say that like the scenes that didn't work for me about that when you go to Saltburn were, And visually, you know, they're sitting by some sort of pool or lake, and it's like a Slim Aaron's photo of the aristocracy. Yeah. But where I thought Ripley excelled over this movie was this conversation and the casual rich person banter and the glimpse into their world. Like, they didn't actually interact or talk about anything novel in those scenes. Like, I felt they were visually additive, but not... with the diction, they didn't add the vocabulary and the subject matter.
I totally
agree. Verbally added.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that. That's a good point, and you're right about that. And I wonder if that has something to do with Ripley taking place in an era where intellectual discourse had a lot more value. You know, it was like the Talented Mr. Ripley was, what was it, early 60s, late 50s, something like that. Oh. And so this idea of being like a wealthy student traveling abroad had this whole personality based around that, where you knew art, you knew literature, you knew music.
You know,
those were the things that you would talk about with people. You knew the best restaurants in Venice and in Florence. You know, you could easily converse about such things. Whereas today, I almost feel like now that you're bringing it up, you're totally right. Maybe it's like today, they just don't have anything to talk about. Like maybe everybody's all stupid now. They're just dumb and rich. Yeah. And that the boy, the dad played by Richard E. Grant, who's been so great, like for, you know, three decades, that guy's been awesome. More. He was just perfectly like duncey, goofy,
and like excited and
detached from reality. And that mom who was you know, the lead in Gone Girl. I love her. I can't remember her name.
Rosamund Pike.
That's right. Yeah.
So good.
She was great. Yeah,
when
everyone
she's
in
trying
it was,
to get when she's trying to get Carrie Mulligan out of the house.
Yes.
It's like, oh, yeah. I wouldn't want to trouble you to you know, it's like oh wait. When she turned up dead.
Yeah.
Carrie Mulligan?
Yes.
What was that about? In my mind, I'm thinking this is a Get Out situation. This means that Oliver's going to end up dead as well. I didn't understand how she died and what that meant to the story. Did you guys even?
No, but by that time it was such a dazzling, colorful buffet of disgustingness and
distractions.
I, yeah, it's like I now... when you say it, I remember that she was dead, but I wouldn't have really even remembered that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm sure it did mean something. I just kind of missed. I wonder if our lead character, the creep, did it somehow.
Right.
Because there was like a very quick montage of him like killing everybody, you know.
Does it seem wildly inconsistent that you would drink bathtub jizz yet not like soft eggs?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. Why brought it back to the eggs.
Well, does that invalidate the whole movie?
I don't know. Yeah. Let's hold off on invalidating it based on
I
want to
ask
eggs.
That at one of the DGA screenings, at like a Q&A when they have the cast that we get invited to. Excuse me. We should just send each other. We should write questions for each other and go to those things and then have to ask
each other's questions.
God,
that would be amazing.
That would be torture. That reminds me of, I believe, Goldie, you had a similar sort of scenario envisioned for if you ever had a Q&A with Billy Joel.
No. Okay.
Okay.
Billy Joel came to my college,
yes,
not to play a concert, but only to answer questions.
Weird.
It's a real thing that happened. And so my friend and I just had a list of stupid questions. We didn't wind up going to the event, but like,
darn it.
One of them was that I remember was it began by going, excuse me, Mr. Joel, I'm your biggest fan. Like, that was an important part of it, is just to say I'm your biggest fan several times before you said anything. And then it was, excuse me, Mr. Joel, in the song The Entertainer, where you say, get put in the back in the discount rack like another can of beans. Two-part question. One, what kind of beans? And two, what store sells both records and beans? Thank you. I'm your biggest fan.
I'm your biggest fan. Again, sir, I'm your biggest fan.
Oh, my God. That would have been so. I knew it. I knew it sparked.
Yeah, so this was something that we repeated to each other ad nauseum. I mean, this is pre-internet, pre-cell phones.
That's so we good.
Would just die talking about. But yeah, it's like the Q&As. Pranking those Q&As once you knew your show business life was over, I might do a victory tour of going to Q&A, just being an asshole.
Pranking
that
every
would be
Q&A,
so fun.
That would be good to film.
That would be it.
So let's think about Saltburn for a minute here in terms of the screenplay, the writing of it. To me, it was like the writing. I almost couldn't even tell you what the style was or what it was like. In terms of the writing, for one thing, Barry Keoghan, the lead actor, spoke so softly you could barely hear what he was saying most of the time. And I think that was, you know, that was by design. He was supposed to be this meek little, you know, sort of peon. Yeah. But it was almost like it didn't really have like a classic structure. It was just like, okay, I'm falling in love with this kid at school, and I'm now his friend, and I'm gonna, you know, insert myself in his life, and then all this craziness happened. So it just didn't, I didn't feel like it built in the traditional way, but I loved it.
I think it's a psychological thriller, but you don't realize that until an hour 15 in.
Right.
You think it's a comedy of manners or something.
Yeah.
And then you realize it's a psychological thriller. Like the one piece, because there were things I have to admit, like, and I'm not bragging, but I was very much ahead of the story at a certain, like I said to my wife, once he got into Saltburn, I was like, that he's bike tire.
He's drinking jizz.
Yeah. Well, I was like, the bike tire thing, we'll be going back to that. That wasn't chance. And then I was like, when the bottle changed hands, where they were in front of that
the
shrub
statue.
That was a big rabbit or whatever. I was like, they're going to replay that to us and show us that was some kind of plot. Like I was onto it by that point. It didn't affect my enjoyment of the movie. I still enjoyed it, but I don't think it was as sort of well disguised necessarily as, you know, in an ideal world it will be. But the one little Easter egg that going back on, I thought was really well done was when he made that friend going into the college who clearly was on a spectrum of some kind with the math. And the guy was like, I can do any problem instantly. I can see so many moves ahead. And it's like, they were actually describing the other guy where it's like, he sees every move
Wow.
So far ahead, you know,
I didn't put that together.
Saw the whole, yeah, and that those two are the same. It's just one was calculating numbers, the other was calculating people the whole time. So I thought that was like very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. I did not put that together until right now. Thanks. Until you told me.
Well, we haven't even discussed the vampire sex scene, which was amazing.
What's the vampire sex scene?
The that time of the month sex scene.
Yeah, right. Vampire sex.
That was ridiculous. And I watched the
whole thing. I love the character of the cousin, by the way, who and the karaoke scene I thought was just top notch when he's singing that. Is it a Pet Shop Boys song? About
or Blur, maybe?
Paying your rent or whatever, you pay my rent.
Yeah.
I thought that was so great. How then he's like, it's really your song, but the other guy owned it in such a funnier, fun way. Where you're like, you tried to get him because it looked like that guy was gonna oust Ollie. Like it looked like he'd more than mismatch.
He was the Philip Seymour Hoffman,
right?
Of Talented Mr. Ripley in this one. Yes. But yeah, well, he got a hand job out of the deal.
Forgot
another crazy scene. There were I would say three or four insane kind of sexual moments along the way that were just exciting enough to like keep me going through the whole thing. Go ahead, JC.
I watched it on the plane, right? And so
covering your screen.
No, I did this thing which probably people would just really hate, but I fast forwarded through a lot of the sex scenes because I don't know. I was like uncomfortable with like this woman sitting, this like, I don't know. sitting on my shoulder.
The older I get, the grosser sex scenes seem to me. Like I'm 4 years old again, where I'm like, ew, like the idea of actors kissing is so gross.
I'm always like, I get it. I know what sex is. So I'm always like, yeah. I know you guys aren't going to do anything different. And then in this movie, I was like, oh, okay. Well, this is a little different.
JC, can you call up who wrote and directed it? Because I think it was the same writer director.
So it was directed by Emerald Lily Fennell, and she is an actress. Oh, she did The Favorite. Okay,
she did The Favorite, which I also really liked. That movie from five or six years ago.
I love that movie. Yes,
with Olivia Colman and someone else, where they were sort of fighting. It was sort of a similar thematically. It was like fighting for a friendship,
right?
Kind of thing.
And she also, you're right, she did write it, and it was also produced by Margot Robbie and two other people. But also, Margot Robbie's all over the place this Oscar season.
I'm also going to say it's a great year for movies, by which I mean there are two good movies.
Yes, that's right. It's unusual to have two that you like. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I also, we're not going to talk about it. I just want to throw a recommendation in. I love the movie Blackberry, which I saw.
I'll watch that. Rent it, or is it on a streaming platform?
It's on Amazon, but you have to pay for like the ultra premium or something.
I saw it on a plane. It's definitely playing on JetBlue. It's worth just maybe booking yourself a cheap flight, catching Blackberry and then coming home. But it's in my favorite genre of movies, which is like big business success and then failure. I will never tire of that genre.
That's great.
While you're throwing out recommendations, this isn't a movie, but I just watched a documentary on Netflix, three-part documentary called Escaping Twin Flame. And Goldie, this is right up our alley. It's almost echoes of the Keith Raniere type situation. It's like a couple who stumble onto this notion of everyone in life has their twin flame. It's like your perfect partner. And so they make a claim at the beginning, like online courses that cost a lot of money, that if you pay and you're involved, you will, by the end of this course, be with your true twin flame. And so along the way, they just basically encourage people to like stalk people who have already rejected them. They're like, oh, that's clearly your twin flame. You've got to
work.
Never. But
spoiler alert,
it's such a slowly unfolding car wreck.
JC, is there a way you could edit out my hopeful tone in that question?
I know. Yeah. Yep. The old twin flame, or sometimes it's one flame and one bucket of water.
But it's like, it's like people who look like me, and they're like, it's like, you're not someone's twin flame. Someone has reached a point where they'll be with you.
Yeah, that's about all we can guarantee. Yeah, no, but it was pretty crazy. Like by the end of the course, because it ended up being mostly women, it was like they were encouraging a lot of the women to say, like, you're transgender. You're really a man. Like, and it was really damaging and awful.
Oh, wow.
And the usual separating people from their families, taking all their money, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, Escaping Twin Flame on Netflix is also fun. All right, well, yeah, Goldie, I agree with you. A couple of good movies there, and I started watching Killers of the Flower Moon. I turned it off after an hour. I couldn't stand
not good.
It. I could not stand it. Go ahead, Goldie.
When there was a wedding, and then they just showed this guy doing this kind of oaky dance for a minute. I was like, I'm out.
God. Really?
I'm not doing this anymore.
Well, also, it's like this thing of, you know, it's Tom Cruise knows himself as an actor, right? He knows exactly what movies he's going to excel in.
Right.
You know, which is why he keeps putting himself in like a Top Gun or a Mission Impossible or that kind of, like he's fucking perfect for that. Leonardo DiCaprio, I think, still does not quite accept who he is. He is an incredibly handsome and charming leading man. He is not like Daniel Day-Lewis.
Right.
He's not a guy who can just kind of transform into any part. So it was this thing where you have all these, you have DiCaprio, De Niro, and Scorsese, three titans of the industry, and all three of them took their biggest clubs out of their bag. So DiCaprio made himself not handsome. So you're instantly like it's not now. It's now I'm just left with the guy trying to act. He gave himself a fake nose, a terrible haircut. He was like heavier. It's like, okay, you're not Leo anymore. De Niro was not Italian. Whenever he plays a non-Italian, it's just like, I don't know. Scorsese took himself out of New York City. Stay in New York City, Martin. That's where all your fantastic movies are made. And so this one, at the prospect of it being 3.5 hours when I was 1 hour in, I was just like, goodbye.
Yeah. Wow.
When you said stay in New York City, Martin, that was it exactly. Why aren't you making 2010, Stanley?
Oh, so you're comparing me to the greatest actor of all time. Yeah. Martin, millions and millions of fans are wondering why you're not in New York City. I was waiting for you to say something nice. Nope. Compared to Brian Attine.
I think you're right. And I think also, you know, Martin Scorsese is kind of like Coke coming out with new sodas at this point.
Ooh.
Right. Like you kind of go, if there was a good soda to be had, probably been made.
Yeah.
You're open to it. But like, you know, it's like, blackberry Coke. I don't know, maybe. like pomegranate Sprite or
something. And also the whole tragic story of Killers of the Flower Moon is essentially like the newspaper headline, bad people, bad. It's like,
I will say the book, having read the book, the book is great, really interesting. The same author as that other book I like called The Wager. Like the story is great. I don't know that it's a good movie story.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
I think it's a really good book story.
Yeah.
Because you just have to like really get in the weeds with some of the history. And it's just it's easier to tell than to show. I mean, quite simply.
Yeah. Well, I think they kind of proved that. Well, anyway, that was fun talking about. It was fun watching those movies. Thanks, Goldie, for spurring that on.
Yes,
those were the holdovers and Saltburn will stick with me for a while. Will sticky with me for a while, especially Saltburn. But now let's get into a portion of the show that we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
God, never sounded better. All right, Goldie, this was your category. Tell the folks what we're top 5-ing about.
Top 5. people you would gladly trade lives with?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Number five, Don McLean. at any moment, you could just get up and sing American Pie, and it would be yours, and everyone would be glad to see you.
That's true. Also, he like has a tradition of dating like 30 years younger models.
No, I don't think anything about him is cool or interesting or anything. You know, I like the song Vincent as well. I just think to go anywhere and be able to play American Pie would be great.
Huge.
Number four, Jill Biden, or really any first lady. Like, you go, I'm set here. I can maybe adopt some cause. I could like bake cookies. I could play tennis. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I have the ear of the president if I want it, but I don't need to be president.
I love this.
I have a staff. I get to live in a house. It's all fine. Number three, and this is just simply because it's the highest iteration of bald man, Jeff Bezos.
Highest iteration of bald man.
You're going to space. You don't need to listen to anyone. Yeah, and but you're famous, but you're also like, and you're treated well, but also no one's going to stop and ask for your autograph.
Right.
You know, you're the bald? Right kind of famous, which is people will point at you, but they won't approach
stop you
because they're not really fans.
Yes. Yeah.
They just know who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That reminds me, Goldie, on New Year's Eve, did you sing Bald Anxine?
No.
Okay. Next. I'm just checking.
Number two, Adam Driver. Because imagine
that's really good.
Just being so average and just being declared great and not having to really be excellent at all. But just somehow having everyone convinced that you were remarkable, even though
that's
you're
amazing.
Totally unremarkable.
That's a hot take.
He might win the Oscar for most face.
Yeah. Like, we've just accepted, like we've been told, you know, he's a big movie star. It's like, he isn't. That's just not true. Oh, he's quite an actor. No, he isn't. False. It's a guy in a shirt saying stuff. Like, yes. There's nothing
in a shirt.
And number one, I think I've probably said this before in some iteation, but Steph Curry.
Yeah, that's a good one. I should have him on the list. That's very good. Oh, yeah, Steph Curry crossover. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to go number five, Jacob Ilardi. He was the hot guy in Saltburn. Like, how much doors would open for that guy wherever he went? Like a 6'3" hot guy who's like in his 20s. Give me that. That's fine. Okay, number four, sort of a similar
thing. Can we just cut and make a sound bite, JC, of a 6'3" hot guy in his 20s, give me that?
Yes.
Don't make that. Don't do that. And YouTube yet, don't do that. All right, number four. Here we go. This will be the antidote for that. Number four, Ana de Armas. If I were Ana de Armas, I would just be soaping up my tits in the shower all day. Gorgeous. Number three, Justin Tucker. You know who that is?
Yeah, Goldie? The kicker for the Ravens.
The kicker for the Baltimore Ravens. He's like the best kicker in the history of the NFL. Never takes a hit. Gets paid millions of dollars and gets to, you know, win championships and like be like a normal, revered part of the team because everybody knows how great he is. So I think that would be fun. Number two, Niall Horan. You know who that is?
Yes. He's from One Direction.
He's also now one of the judges on The Voice.
The Voice. Okay.
And he is absolutely like the right level of very rich and famous, because he's very rich and famous, but he's not Harry Styles where he can't like have a life or go anywhere. But he's like given this gig. He seems like a totally likable guy. I like him a lot. Number one, Betty White.
We have crossover.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Amazing. Because first of all, she's dead, so she doesn't have to make any more decisions. Like, she has nothing on her plate But she was incredibly beloved. So clearly all the decisions she made were already right and they're in the past.
So if she was still alive, like, that's the type of thing I love to backlash against as a hot take. Yes. Like, I felt it went too far when they were like, you have to let Betty White host SNL. And it's like, well, now this poor 97-year-old woman is just suffering through right. staying up late
all
because
nights,
you
yeah.
you demanded it of her.
Right. Well, she wasn't as good as Trump, that's for sure.
Oh, geez.
Well, he was hilarious.
He was your favorite.
Best host ever. All right, that's my list. That was fun. JC,
was
what
great.
Do you got?
Listen, okay, you put together Lorne and Trump. That's an all-star comedy team. I mean, both those guys are so funny. Lauren's,
oh, Lauren.
Lauren's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Side splitting.
Yes.
Oh, God. Just to pick Lauren's brain.
Just joke after joke.
I would say watch the Getting Coffee with Comedians. Is that what you know?
Yeah.
With Lorne Michaels.
Oh, so funny.
So awkward. Awkward. Okay. So I just, by the way, I have a listening session in 10 minutes. So I think we're going to be fine.
Here we go.
My number five is it Usain Bolt? I'd love to know what it feels like to be the fastest human on the planet.
That's a good one.
And he's cool. He's very cool.
Very cool. Yes. Yes. Number two, Betty White.
Number four, how about?
So no.
New year, same JC.
Betty White.
Betty White, number four. Number three, Paul McCartney.
Number three works going upward.
Yeah, either way, you're safe. Paul McCartney, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Number two, Seth Curry.
No, Steph.
Steph. That was weird. Seth, I'll tell you why. Because my number one is Seth's cats. That's my number one.
Seth MacFarlane's cats. Yes. Yeah, because he loves them, clearly.
He loves them. They have, you know, I'm sure they're spoiled and they have a beautiful place to.
Well, great list. Yeah. And so, JC, what are we going to top five about next week?
This is very random, but top five older people names.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. Good. Can I leave it at that? Okay, great.
Love it.
Okay, cool.
Love it. All right, cool. So that'll be next week. And do we have a guest next week?
No.
We don't. It's just going to be us again. We're going to talk about Saltburn and the Holdovers. So tune in for that. Now we'll think of something to talk about next week.
Yeah.
All right, but for now, let's end the show as we do every week on a high note. Tom and Max, happy New Year, Tom
happy
and Max.
Happy New Year.
Tom, we're getting you back on here in 2024. That's a vow we're making right
this
now.
Is a fact.
Cavalierly early in January. All right. My high note was pretty simple. We had a New Year's Eve party here on Cape Cod, and it was great, and I had fun.
Ooh, all right.
So that's about as high a note as I can get, and I feel like I'm sort of exercising some of the demons from my 50th birthday party.
I was thinking
were you able to get that piano player back?
All right, settle down. Well, that was actually part of the fun because it was sort of built up like during the week, like, Tal was telling me like, you know, so-and-so really wants you to play piano and they're looking forward to you playing piano. Never happened. We were all just having fun. And like, so there was never a moment where it was like, go play. We had a great time. Just the right amount of drinks. And
that's awesome.
A lot of fun.
Okay. I will go. It's very easy. I sort of talked about it at the beginning. It was had the best vacation, even though we both got sick. I really had a reset. My whole nervous system, I feel like, is back to normal. I feel rested. I feel happiness. Which is a good way to start a year. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the trend goes and, you know, very appreciative for the things that I have in my life and my husband and you guys and our podcast and the fact that I have a job and all these things. So,
Bravo.
That is my high note. Yes.
Bravo.
Thank you.
That was great. I I just really enjoyed connecting with my cousins this week. I don't get to see them very much. Some of my family's here, some's in Texas, whatever. And it's like, I just have so many cool cousins. Like, it's crazy. Like,
that's awesome.
Each one of them, great. People I truly enjoy. And so it's like, I never get that dose of extended family. It's so rare. But, you know, I felt like very privileged to be part of such a cool family.
Oh, that's nice.
That's beautiful.
It's a good way to
say it. I mean, imagine like I'm in the middle
of coolness.
Yeah.
Amidst.
All right. So you got so some awesome. Really cool ones there.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You know, really and also, cool. you know, we'll all raise a glass of water or juice or whatever to your Aunt Dorothea, who played her innings, lived a good long life. Sounds like she was a very cool, funny, talented lady. So.
Yes.
Listen, I'm glad.
Anyone who shot down Norman Lear is a hero. Right?
In my book.
Oh, we love Norman Lear.
She said, with that stupid hat, are you kidding me?
No.
All right. Well, that was a fun first show of the year. Thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
In 2025.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Like a 6'3 hot guy who's like in his 20s. Give me that.